So we only have a little while, maybe 10 to 15 minutes, and then we'll switch to our report time for a business meeting. So let's turn to, I think we finished page 267 last week. So we're going to look at 268 tonight. I'm going to start this, and where we left off in 2 Corinthians, I know the book calls this joy in ministry, but there's also a lot of disappointments Paul endured, and that's what he focuses on. And one of the main issues in 2 Corinthians is that he's having to defend himself from enemies. There are enemies of the cross, right? There's enemies of the church. There's enemies of biblical Christianity, common sense, morals, and ethics. And Paul dealt with them then, we deal with them today, and we will continue dealing with them, I promise you, until the very end. So in the process of addressing that, he defends himself. We looked at about 6 or 7 ways he did that and finished up last week. And then we also touched on the thorn in the flesh that he spoke of in the context of the last defense in chapter 12. So tonight, we're going to turn the page. We spent a lot of time on that one page, but we probably missed about 5 weeks around Christmas and different activities. So we're going to look tonight on page 268, and the book entitles this section, Joy in Serving Jesus. So let's read the top part, and then we'll start working our way down through this page. We'll probably get down at least halfway, and then we'll switch to our quick report time with our business meeting. So your book states at the top of this page that Paul said many good things about the Corinthians in his letter. His earlier letters had helped them and they had improved. Remember, he wrote more than just the two letters you have in your Bible. I can't remember now, there's evidence of at least 3, if not 4 times Paul wrote to the people in Corinth. So he addressed issues, they had improved, they'd acted on those, and now what he does, he shows his happiness about this improvement. And the question is, in chapter 1, for what good thing did Paul compliment the Corinthians in chapter 1 and verse 11? Here is the answer, and then we'll look at the verse. So, he compliments them in chapter 1 for praying for him. That's probably not what you were expecting. I think sometimes we undervalue prayer. We even belittle prayer. And when you do that, it really needs to be a focus of our lives and our church. And so Paul made it a point to say that I really appreciate that you simply pray for me. So let's look at what he says in chapter 1, verse 11. In fact, I might start back at verse 8, because it looks like it's going to complete the thought. So Paul says to these believers as he begins this letter, second one recorded in our Bible, "We don't want you to be unaware, brethren, of our affliction which came to us in Asia." Okay, ministry was not easy for Paul. Remember, he suffered a lot. "Don't want you to be unaware that about the affliction that we were burdened excessively beyond our strength, so that we despaired even of life." That's how close it came to a matter of death and life. "Indeed, we had the sentence of death within ourselves in order that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead." So Paul expected he was not going to make it with whatever that particular affliction was. But then what he does, he addresses who God is in verse 10. And he says, "It's God who raises the dead, who delivered us from so great a peril of death." He was about to die in ministry. He's going to be a martyr for the faith. "And he will deliver us, he on whom we have set our hope. And he will yet deliver us." And then here's what he says in verse 11. "You also joining in helping us." And how do they help him? Through your prayers. "You're helping us through your prayers, that thanks may be given by many persons on our behalf for the favor bestowed upon us through the prayers of many." So I will say that while in 2 Corinthians, Paul, some really see Paul going off, like really very direct in the way he words things, taking a dagger and kind of sticking it in and kind of twist a little bit and then back it back out. He's kind of spiritually doing that in 2 Corinthians, but look what he does. Even though he has to address so much attack against himself, he says, I want y'all to know something I really appreciate about you as a church. I appreciate your prayers for me. There is power in prayer. And the only thing, here's the only thing I don't like about prayer. And that doesn't sound very good, I know. Here's the only thing I don't like about prayer. You don't always know the effects of your prayers. That's what I don't like. Like, I wish I could know, I really wish I could know that, well, let's just do this. Susan McDowell, when she had her surgery with her knee, we prayed for that very specifically, right? I really would like to know, how did God use a prayer specifically to intervene to bring about a good surgery, a successful surgery, a recovery, a lack of infection? Because sometimes I wonder, now Lord, what if we hadn't prayed for something? What would have been the outcome? So you don't know sometimes how... I don't know if the universe is hardwired by prayer. I heard somebody say that one time, and I'm still wrestling with that. But you don't know sometimes how your prayers are what God is using sovereignly to accomplish His will and purpose in people's lives. And it makes you wonder, what if we hadn't focused on that in prayer? Would it still have come out that way? So it was very important to Paul. And even though he was near death in ministry, he wanted to compliment them for their prayers. So he starts off with that. So thankful they were praying for him. Now, second little paragraph, Paul also showed joy over the service that he offers to Christ. He was excited about the ministry, joyful to be a part of that. But in spite of all the trouble he faced, because he faced a lot, he served Christ with joy. Now, it is hard. It's very hard to always serve with joy when you get discouraged, when you feel like nothing is happening, when you feel like nobody appreciates what you do, nobody ever says anything about what you do, you're never recognized, you wonder if God even knows, does He see? Okay, it's really hard to maintain a joy in serving sometimes, although I think the serving itself sometimes brings some joy. But with everything he faced, Paul served Christ with joy. Now here's what the book wants us to look at in chapter 4. According to chapter 4, verses 16 through 18, what was it that encouraged Paul when times were tough? That's a good question. What is it that encourages you when times are tough? Well, here's what Paul writes in those verses of chapter 4. Paul is encouraged by the eternal glory that is unseen. So, let's see what it says. This is going to be, in chapter 4. In verse 16. And listen, you might need to mark these verses. There's two spots in particular that I marked that help encourage you when it's very difficult and when the struggle is real. And this is one of those two. So here's what Paul says. With all that he's dealt with, the attack in his ministry, how close he came to death, being crushed, you know, despair and all that. He says, therefore, we do not lose heart. Because that's easy to lose heart, right? To give up, to become discouraged, throw in the towel. We do not lose heart. But though our outer man is decaying, in other words, this doesn't sound very encouraging, but you're closer to death today than you were yesterday. And even if you never have a catastrophic event happen in your life, an accident of some sort to like radically change your life. In fact, made me think about it this morning. My brother's oldest son works for fire and rescue in Caroline County. And there was evidently some kind of a really serious accident on the 301 bypass on Bowling Green. A couple tractor trailers and all. And he doesn't know all the details yet. But from what he can gather, there was an overturned four-wheel drive truck, which, by the way, I don't know what's wrong with people that drive four-wheel drive pickups and big tires. They think, for some reason,
They'd be in jacked off the ground 2 or 3 feet and big tires and four-wheel drives would keep them from sliding on ice. And it never does. It never does. And so sure enough, probably driving recklessly, and then the guy flips his truck right on 301, right on the bypass. And so blocking all the lanes, well, a tractor trailer stopped right there on 301, and a car was behind that tractor trailer. Well, another tractor trailer came up, and it's, again, I don't know all the details, my brother doesn't know for sure all that happened, but it doesn't appear that truck slowed down one bit and rammed the back of that car and shoved it under that truck, and the guy died instantly. Okay, now why I'm sharing that, because things happen like really quick in life, and you may not realize how much closer to death you are today than you were yesterday. And I mean, we just don't know, right? You've got to always be prepared for the very real prospect of death. And we don't want to think about that, but it's just a reality in a fallen world affected by sin. Now, here's what I think Paul is saying.
What he says here,
our outer man is decaying. Now, even if you never have a traumatic experience that greatly alters your life, and possibly death, even if that never happens, here's a reminder. The outer person, physical person you are, it is decaying. Sheila, was your daddy 95? That's a ripe old age in our day and time, right? And we're very, very thankful for that. But the point is this. If you never encounter a serious accident incident along the way, we are decaying, right? The body... Look, I'm going to tell you what. My birthday was last Friday, I think. I think that's right. And I'm looking at where I'm at right now. And I'm like, Lord, I cannot believe. Now, think about it. Take your age right now, whatever it is. Whether it's 20 or 70, whatever it is. Take your age. I want you to think about this. And I don't know the scientific answer to this because I didn't look it up, because I won't plan on saying none of this tonight. Think about the number of times your heart has beat since you were born. At some point, that muscle can get tired, y'all. Right? At some point, vessels get weaker. Okay, the point is, the outer man is decaying. Hear what Paul says. Even though my outer man is decaying, yet the inner man is being renewed day by day. There's a big difference in the material side of you and the immaterial side of you, right? It's a big difference in your body and your soul, your spirit. So here's what Paul says. Although I don't lose heart. Okay. He's like, I can look in the mirror and tell I've aged. I've got wrinkles and I've got hairs and I've got, well, lack of hairs. Right? I can tell I've aged. That's what he's saying. My outer man is decaying, but inside I'm renewed day by day. Now, here's what keeps him going. And this is what the book is getting at here in this question. What keeps him going when times are tough? Here's what he says. Momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. Now, one thing stands up to me in what he says here. Paul was shipwrecked. He was beaten. He's already said in this letter, I thought I was going to die in ministry. And compared to the weight of glory of heaven, he calls all that stuff light affliction. I don't consider that stuff light affliction. Right? I put my head down at night. If I'm dealing with something hard, I can barely sleep because I'm up thinking about, worrying about me. It's human nature. Here's Paul's perspective. That stuff, he said, that light affliction, all it's doing for me is producing an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison to what I'm dealing with in this life. Then he concludes in verse 18. As he lives his life, he says, while we look not at the things which are seen, okay, I don't keep my focus on this earth and this world. It's not my focus looking at things which are seen, physical around me, but it's the things which are not seen. It's the spiritual matters, the eternal matters. For the things which are seen are temporal, right? They're going to all be burned up one day, cataclysmic ball of fire for new heavens and new earth. But the things which are not seen, those are eternal. All right, Paul, here's a question from our book.
What encourages you when times get tough? Here's Paul's answer.
There's an eternal glory that you cannot see in this world. That's what keeps me going. That is a mind adjustment there. That's a worldview adjustment. That's me somehow rising above the circumstances of life on this earth and saying, you know what? And it happens all the time. Did y'all know that? Little petty issues come up a lot. People get so mad, they blow things out of proportion. That's the thing you know. It's like, Paul's like, look, this little stuff, I'm not too concerned about it. Here's what keeps me going. Eternal weight of glory of things you can't see on this earth.
That's what Paul says is his secret in 2 Corinthians. I went on that a little longer than I had planned to go. But I thought it was an interesting perspective. All right, before we quit for tonight, anything stand up there you want to share a testimony? Anything you want to ask? It's a very simple statement, but it's a very good statement. Thank y'all for praying for me. That's what he says. And I keep going by looking at things you can't see. So focus on eternal glory.